Hello, my name's Jen Thatcher, and it's my pleasure to be chairing the first in a series of Resonance FM programmes around art practice and parenthood under the series title Enemies of Good Art. We thought we might title this first show Don't Mention Mary Kelly, because it seems that her famous work, Postpartum Document of 1973 to 1977, is about the only work around parenthood and early childhood that anyone ever talks about, so we are all banned from talking about it. So I'm joined in the studio here by photographer Martina Milani, who started the movement Enemies of Good Art as a series of public meetings just over a year ago. And I'm also here with acclaimed photographer Ruud Blies Luxemburg. Hello. And also delighted that the curator and writer Susan Bright is joining us by phone from New York. Hello, Susan.
Hello, Jen.
So there have already been three public discussions, two at Goshko Makuga's installation, The Nature of the Beast, at the Whitechapel Gallery, one chaired by myself and another by Charlotte Cotton, and one at Tate Modern, chaired by J.J. Charlesworth. And a fourth discussion will have taken place earlier today, Friday 1st of October, in the moving image studio of the Royal College of Art of the Battersea campus from 12 till 2, with academic and writer Laura Mulvey chairing. And details and documentation of all these talks can be found on the website, www.enemiesofgoodart.org. So, back to the title, Enemies of Good Art. Well, as many of you will already be familiar, Enemies of Good Art takes its title from Cyril Connolly's infamous dictum, There is no more somber enemy of good art than the pram in the hall, which apparently someone had quoted, I believe, at Martina when she was pregnant with her daughter and had filled her with some kind of dread and anxiety about her own photographic practice. The quote comes from Connolly's 1938 book Enemies of Promise, which investigates how a novel can stand the test of time and, for our purposes, examines the optimum writing conditions for a writer, or here, an artist, photographer, or perhaps any creative practitioner. So this burden of domesticity, the idea of parenthood, is only one of a large number of inconveniences that Connolly mentions many of us would consider to be part of normal life. For Connolly, an ideal writer has a private income, so he doesn't need to worry about anything as boring as a job. He's a bourgeois, he's rich, he went to Eton if possible, he's a late riser, he's lazy, and on balance, he's probably better off being homosexual than being tied to wife and kids. And needless to say, this ideal writer is very much a man. So just to bring the quote into context, I'm going to ask Martina to read the paragraph in which this quote is situated in the book. Would you read it for me, Martina?
With pleasure. And I did hear this quote with horror and dread at the time, so here we go. The lead up to it is, marriage can succeed for an artist only where there is enough money to save him from taking on uncongenial work, and a wife who is intelligent and unselfish enough to understand and respect the working of the unfriendly cycle of the creative imagination. She will know at what point domestic happiness begins to cloy, where love, tidiness, rent, rates, clothes, entertaining and rings at the doorbell should stop, and will recognise that there is no more sombre enemy of good art than the pram in the hall.
Right. So, Martina, perhaps you could start with your thoughts on that particular quote. And what particular aspects of that filled you with horror?
Well, for me, and I think for a lot of other practising artists, and I'm going to say women, because I think the burden of responsibility in terms of childcare still rests mainly with women, or to a great degree it still does. And I certainly heard this quote and thought, I'm never going to make work again, or how I couldn't imagine how I might make work again once I had a small child. And I was concerned about how I would fall in love with this little being that was so longed and I'd waited for such, you know, with anticipation, like a lot of expectant parents for a long time. But I was afraid that I might practically not be able to make work, but also that it would change my creativity in such a way that I wouldn't want to make work, or perhaps wondering how I might change my practice to accommodate the dependency or that was going to be placed upon me in terms of me being expected to be at home.
And did you find the reality as bad as your expectations?
I wouldn't say bad, but certainly, and I don't know if Walt would agree, but certainly my practice has had to change. And where I've been able to, you know, disappear for weeks or months on end to make work or think about making work, I can't do that now. So,
so that's an issue of time and perhaps energy. What about some of the other things that Connolly mentions? Almost, he has a fear of being too happy. He says a writer needs to be slightly unhappy to make work. And he thought that if you fell in love with a wife and child, this would make you far too happy to make work. Do you agree with that, Holt?
Well, frankly, Cyril Connolly doesn't sound happy to me at all. He actually sounds very mean. And when you read a book and find out what he thinks about other writers, other artists like Proust or Joyce, then you start to question his whole premise.
Although he did say he was aiming to write a book that would last longer than 10 years, and here we are discussing his
Yes,
ideas.
I think it's also questionable that we resurrected this guy, and maybe we should have...
We should have a book burning session.
Absolutely. Well, maybe not burning, but... Yes, maybe this is not the right starting point for young mothers and fathers, and maybe one has to rethink the whole notion of parenting. And when you already have this very bleak vision, how do you overcome that? That becomes quite a difficult climb. So I was looking for other writers who have a more positive, idle notion of parenting, like Walt Whitman, for example.
Mm. So do you've got something to read out as well, Holt?
Yes, I do. So he talks about what is it to be a poet, what is it to be an artist, a writer, and he talks about a male writer, but I now assume, and I think I am in the right to assume a female identity because he embraces the female as well. So he says, the artist knows that she is unspeakably great and that all are unspeakably great. That nothing, for instance, is greater than to conceive children and bring them up well. Mm. That to be is just as great as to perceive or tell. And in a way, that's far more attractive to me than Cyril Connolly, who also is pretty much forgotten, even in Britain.
Sure, just for that quote. But it was quite useful to read the context for that quote and yes. realize quite how out of date the rest of his ideas were and how actually prejudiced against many other types of lifestyles he was. So just to be able to put it in context. What do you think, Susan? I can hear your
I thought it was it's an extraordinary book. I haven't read the whole thing, I have to say that, but the bits that I have read, I just laughing out loud. It's just extraordinary. And no, not a good starting point, after.
But do we think he was entirely serious? Because parts of me thinks he couldn't have been serious, but perhaps no, that was the reality for some men in 1938.
Yeah, and I think it definitely was, and I think that it didn't even cross his mind that women could be artists or writers. It wasn't on his kind of sphere. So I think it was entirely serious. I think it's interesting that Ruth said she looked to other writers, because that's exactly what I did when I had my daughter. I was just like, oh, how do I make sense of this? Because it's crazy. So I looked to art and I looked to literature to try and find something that could express my feelings. And what happened was I bought a lot of stack of books and I haven't read most of them, which is what usually happens with me. But the book that really helped me understand was The Mother Knot by Jane Lazar, which is written in the 70s, and it's a kind of feminist classic, and it's very like The Women's Room is. It seems a bit kind of hardcore now when you read it, but so much of that was really poignant and really, you know, made sense of it all for me. Definitely.
Which parts were poignant to you? What do you remember from it?
It was more the relationship with her partner rather than the relationship with her son, because her relationship with her son is very different from mine with my daughter. But it was that shift that she had with her partner that she tries to explain, and how... that, you know, that desire to work. She was very young. She was studying, and she was needed to study and work, and how that was negotiated. in their relationship, and how expectations, how suddenly you kind of fall into 1950s roles, and how angry that makes you feel.
Did you feel, both of you, Martina and Hort, that you were falling into a role that you hadn't expected to be in?
I certainly have. And a friend of mine describes a little group of us as angry art mums, because we're desperately
trying
to... That
sounds very Sarah Palin.
Well, we are desperately trying to juggle childcare, paid work, and studio practices. Or not even studio practices, practices. And finding it quite difficult with partners who work full time and not necessarily artists, so don't have the same sort of sympathy, perhaps. But we are a group of angry art mothers. Yes, yeah. I never expected I would be engaged in domesticity as much as I am,
or running a movement called Enemies of Good Art.
Well, I think if I weren't feeling the frustrations and perhaps a degree of unhappiness about some of it, then I probably wouldn't have started this.
And what's been, let's go back to all these meetings, public meetings that you've been holding, Martina. What have you got from those meetings? What's the feeling amongst other angry mums?
Well, I wouldn't say we're all angry art mothers, but certainly every time I organise, or we, there's a little group of us working on it now, organise another meeting, we are constantly inundated with emails from far and wide saying it's really great that you're doing this, and it's really great that it's a platform by which we can actually meet in public and speak about our frustrations in terms of our practice and parenting, if we want. But although I still like to use the term motherhood, because it's mostly women who are contacting us. Mm-hmm. And somehow the fact that it's an open discussion, an open public discussion, has become very welcomed. And a lot of people are talking about the fact that this hasn't happened before, or very much so. Well, in
yeah.
terms of...
Why do you think that this issue seems so invisible in the art world, that children and parenthood and domesticity in general, sometimes also just having a partner, seems invisible in some places? I remember my first job in a gallery, people never brought their partners out, and you would never know whether anyone had a boyfriend, girlfriend, was married, had children. You just would learn nothing about their private lives. And it seems such a really odd world to me that you were not allowed to have a kind of domestic life in the art world. Do you think that's changed? That was 10 years ago.
I don't know what the statistics are. The statistics would actually be very interesting in this case, to find out the data, how many artists, female artists, are having children, and if there has been a major shift since the 70s.
And I got the sense, and at what age they're having them as well?
Yes.
Do you know of anyone who is the young, and by which I mean maybe under 30, and is having children, in artists or writers?
There must be a few.
Susan?
No, I don't know. Anecdotally, I don't know any.
No, nor do I. Which is...
Well, I mean, again, another anecdote, but when I did a show at Tate Britain with co-curated with Val Williams, what was telling was, at the private view, a lot of of the photographers brought their children and their mums and dads. And the people who we were working with at Tate were so astounded by this. They said, God, this is the only private view we've ever had that people have brought their mums and dads and their kids to. And, you know, isn't that extraordinary? And we said, well, not really, because these people have never had their work in the Tate before. So... And it's very unusual for a lot of these people to have their work in the Tate. So, of course, they want to bring their family. It's a moment of complete pride for them. But we were quite struck that we thought that they said that, you know, people wouldn't have brought their kids before.
Someone was telling me today they thought the art world was like a Victorian workhouse, and that, you know, any decline in productivity or efficiency would be immediately punishable. And I can understand that in a way. One of the last places I worked, whenever anyone had a... went away to have a baby, they just wouldn't come back. It was like they'd sort of been got rid of. And you know,
I think that's because the pay's so bad a lot of the time that it doesn't add up to go back.
I think that
exactly.
It was a mix of their choice, but also jobs, you know, the art world changing so quickly that jobs would be restructured.
But I think we have to clarify this here, because you're talking not from a position as an artist,
no.
but as a
yes.
critic. So
yeah.
you see it as a job. Whereas I think for an artist, it's not really a job.
No.
Yeah.
It's more of a, can I even say, a calling? Or a
you can, and there's no choice involved. What else could you do if you weren't doing this?
Oh, I'm sure we could do many things.
Badly. No, but with your, but yeah, of course you could. But would you want to? And would it not drive you insane? Of course it would. So there is no choice. You have to do this. I believe so. I believe that, you know, that people do have callings, and artists as much as medical practitioners or whatever your practice or your life might be about, that certain people feel called towards it and don't feel they can do anything else with their lives.
Do you think that your practice has changed, Holt, since you had a child?
It's perhaps slowed down, but I can't really judge it. But I'm happy with my practice. I think I'm working now less, but better or faster.
I remember reading a little while ago that the novelist Tracy Chevalier was asked, or was told that every baby cost her one book. I think, I don't know how many children she has, I think one or two. And she said that this was a, she thought that was a very reasonable payoff, and
well,
she was okay with
this
that.
This is quite an interesting quote, because I think she might have written fewer books, but thank God, and all those books she's produced.
I mean, is not that because you don't like her writing?
No, I've never ever read her writing. I've never read her writing, but I'm sure the ones she is producing now are better.
Okay. Do you agree, Susan, as a writer?
Output.
Totally. Having a child has completely changed the way I write. It's completely changed how much I write and what I choose to write about.
So what do you choose to write about now?
Well, I'm just about to start a PhD on representations of motherhood. So,
okay.
It hugely influenced me. I used to do a lot of writing articles because I needed the money. I won't do that now. I'll just write what I want to write about. I only teach what I want to teach, and I've cut it right down. And I think what I do is better now, and I enjoy it more. So I would say that definitely it's changed my working practice, and it's changed it for the better.
But is that because you don't need the money and you can afford to be more choosy about what you do, or is because you're a mother and you don't feel you've got the time to do the things you don't want to do?
I think it's a mixture of the two. My circumstances have definitely changed. My partner now has a full-time job, a proper job, instead of being freelance. Hmm. And also, I don't buy nice shoes anymore. I don't care about nice shoes anymore. I used to spend a lot of money on clothes and books, and I buy fewer books, and I, wear the same thing every day. So
I don't approve of that. Sorry.
Wood is wearing beautiful shoes today.
Yes, you must not let yourself go. You still have to.
This is like the 1950s advice corner.
Yes,
now.
Yes, you have to still adorn yourself and buy the.
I do, but I don't need to do it as much as I did because I went out more, so I don't go as out much as now. So I don't need to keep.
Holt's not looking very impressed. Okay, maybe we should move on from this question of whether you should best spend your money on shoes or academic books or...
No, but the question about practice changing is an important one.
Mm. Yeah, and Martina, you haven't answered that question.
I haven't because, well, this is my practice now, I suppose, doing this. But in terms of picking up the camera again, I haven't got going, so I don't know. So I don't know if it's better or I don't know if I'll be... I will be definitely more... sure about my choices.
But do you feel that you are you hesitating to pick up your camera? Are you anxious about picking it up?
No. It's in fact, and I do have a project in mind that I want to get going. It's just finding the time to do so is problematic at the moment because my little one isn't two yet.
Martina, is it related to anything to do with childhood or mothering or anything like that, or is it completely different?
No. In fact, I haven't. I made a piece of work before I had a child. That piece of work I made in Georgia that Ruth knows, but that was me very much thinking about our longing. But no, I'm not approaching anything to do with childbirth or children. It's something very different.
Do you think there's been any good work made about? Sorry, Susan, what were you going to say?
I was going to ask Ruth. Has her, as far as I know, her practice hasn't changed to deal with any of those personal things at all?
No, but I think the experiences one has, they enlarge. You know, you now deal with another person in your life and you're no longer so focused on yourself. And So those experiences and knowledges certainly must enrich your thinking on some level.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think because we're much less selfish now, we don't, you know, because we have this other person in our life, or two, depending on how many children you have. But also, I also think we've got less time to procrastinate. And I think that's really important to acknowledge as well.
That seems like a useful thing to have as a skill in today's world where there are so many distractions. Do you think that's true? I was reading, I think it's like the most read article on The Guardian's website at the moment, but it's Charlie Brooker who's writing about all the digital distractions at the moment, all the social networking, all the emails, any kind of virtual communication. And I think that the article was called Google Instant is Trying to Kill Me, and he was just trying to find 20 minutes of his day where he was not bombarded with stuff.
Living in London is a massive distraction.
Yeah.
You could just spend your life going to exhibitions and lectures here and never think about, or never get the chance to think about making work.
And do you think that parenthood, in a way, kind of frees you up to make those priorities?
For me, it has, definitely. I've found that, you know, I work 3 days a week now, and I work really hard on those 3 days. I get a week's work done in those 3 days, whereas before I would have spread it out for as long as possible, but now that's just not an option.
No.
So for me, it's a good thing.
But there's also something about having this something outside of yourself to think about. Everything we do now impacts upon our children in terms of how we conduct our lives and what it will mean to them in the future. And that's, I think, an important point, because, again, it comes back to that idea of not being selfish or not allowed to be selfish anymore, that somehow, whether I do what I want to do and succeed at it, not in terms of any financial gain or notoriety, but because I might be more rounded and a happier person because I do what I feel I have a calling to do.
Or do you ever think about wanting to make your child proud of you for having achieved good work? Do you feel like you're making work possibly with your child in mind, seeing it later in their lives and thinking that's what my mother did?
Yes, of course. But when I had my son, I felt of him, I mean, this sounds now very sentimental, but it's true. He made me so much more proud than anything else I'd ever done before. Mm. So.
Your greatest life's work.
Yes.
Your life's work.
Are there any artists that you know about who are making good work about this issue?
Susan might be the one to answer that.
There's a ton of it. That's what's really interesting to me, because when I started to research this, I thought, oh, there's not much around, and I haven't really seen anything good for a long time, and it's just there. It just hasn't been shown. I think what's really interesting is looking back at the history of exhibitions about this, is there's very, very few about parenting or motherhood or children. And that's really telling. But that doesn't mean to say that there's not good work out there. It's just has difficulty getting shown, I think, for many, many reasons, a lot of which we've touched on. It doesn't mean it's not good at all. I would say that there's a lot of it. What is interesting is there's been a lot of work around the home and domesticity. That seems to be a very popular subject, right from The Pleasures and Terrors of... Pleasures and Terrors of something, which Peter Glaffy did at MoMA 20 years ago, which had people like Gregory Crutzen and Philip Lord de Corsia. That really kind of snowballed an interest in the house and the home.
But that was from a very uncanny kind of point of view, right? It wasn't exactly a happy home and about relationships, happy relationships within it.
No, absolutely. But it didn't directly address kind of ideas of parenting or children. And there were a kind of a whole slew of exhibitions that followed that around the topic of the home. But actually, specifically on mothering or children, there's been very, very few.
But it's interesting that you bring in this notion of domesticity, and as Jen just touched upon, this is the house of horror, really, like the Surreal House recently. This is where things go wrong. No? Hello?
Yeah, and a lot of work around motherhood is also like that. But there's also a lot of very good work that isn't.
And just to mention a few, Erna Carucci's work, new work about with the children. Great. Mallory Marder's work about pregnancy called Nine, which she took a photograph every month that she did in 2006. Anna Casas, who's a Mexican artist, beautiful project, which has been going on since 1998 and ongoing.
Is she a photographer as well?
Yeah, she is, a fine artist. Justin Kurland, done a lot of, these are all photography, this is my kind of main area of interest.
But do you think there's possibly more photographers who are interested in this subject? I mean, there's no coincidence, Martina, that everyone here today is interested, either is a photographer or writes about photography.
I don't know, I just don't know about outside of that, so I wouldn't like to say.
Yeah. Sure. Do you think, Martina, that there's a particular relationship with photography and this subject, or an ability to maybe represent this area of life?
I'm not sure. No, why would there be in this medium than any other? But
well, there could be reasons. I mean, photography has a relationship to the real in a way painting perhaps doesn't.
But any subject matter can be covered by any medium.
Photographers generally have a little bit more time. It takes longer to make a painting, or if you make your sculptures yourself, that's so much more time intensive than photography.
If all of a sudden you started making work around your son, or work inspired by that, would people think you'd lost the plot? Because you make all this beautiful work at night, and then all of a sudden...
I would have lost the plot.
But your practice would change to incorporate this monumental,
but you know,
experience.
My practice encompasses it already. I work around cities. This is the multitude of us all, and also the city is the home of my child. And what does it mean to be a participant in the city? It touches also on his life. So I think it my practice, although it might not seem obvious, but it does. It encompasses that.
Not sure. I
oh, absolutely.
But do you think the personal is, in terms of exhibitions at the moment, or issues that are most prevalent in the art and photography world, don't you think that issues around globalization, global politics, and all this is becoming much more important than the personal? Is it, or is this perhaps just a fashion at the moment?
But it's not
fashion.
Yeah, but I don't think it's opposed to each other. And what we're talking about is also, as cliched as it sounds, it's a global issue.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but trends come in and out, you know, ideas and notions. You know, a few years ago, if you made anything that was inspired by the work in Iraq, then you had no problem getting a show. It just, I think things do come in and out of fashion. Except women are always going to be having babies, and we're not always having shows about, you know, work made on the back of that.
But I think one has to look at this in a much broader way. And to take it back again to my practice.
Yes.
I don't know if that makes it any broader. But I really...
I wish we could show photographs here on radio, but you can look up Hoot's
yes,
work
even
online.
That in my case, I go out in the city and do these images outside in the dark. That is as much a feminist issue, and I'm a mother. And how many women do you see actually in the public working? Not many.
And maybe not at night as well.
No. So it's also about presence and doing it.
Okay, well... I wanted to ask Martina, moving on, what her ambitions were for Enemies of Good Art, with whether she was... But certain you talked a lot about awareness building and just sharing information, which I think is always a very important starting point for a movement. But is there anything else that you're hoping to achieve with it? Do you see yourself as campaigning for anything? Are there any... issues your members particularly want to raise awareness of, or can you give us any examples of?
Well, first of all, I don't think we can say members, because we haven't formed ourselves in any sort of official organized group. It's just a little gang of us trying to give mostly women, but men, of course, are welcome to join the discussion.
How many people do you think you've have spoken or participated at these sessions so far?
Oh, so far over 100. Wow, at the public meetings.
Impressive.
Well, it just, for me, it just goes to show how the subject, it's a welcome opportunity in terms of discussion. But in terms of where we go, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And first of all, you know, we're all artists in one capacity or another, whether we be writers or dancers, and we come from very different disciplines. But I don't think I can see myself working on this forever. For now, it's important in my life, and the women who are working on it, maybe we pass it on when our kids start school. Maybe it'll just die a death, I don't know. But for now, to continue with the public meetings is important. And also to encourage academic discussion around it, I think it feels like an important thing to do right now. So where it'll go, I'm not entirely sure. But all the information that we gather, and even these shows on Resonance, for which there are 9 planned, will end up on our website as podcasts. So they become like a free resource, and the website's quite important. They become a free resource for information.
You've been doing a lot of research at Goldsmiths, haven't you, Martina, on in the Make Library. Is that right? Looking at previous publications. No, you haven't.
I haven't got there yet, no.
Okay. But you were telling me about a particular publication that you were looking at.
Well, I am looking at it, and I'm lusting after it. But whether or not we do anything is another thing. I quite like the idea of gathering writings together by practitioners, writers, whoever, not as a visual art platform, but as a journal of thoughts and musings, perhaps, around the subject of the longing for children, or the practicalities, or the difficulties, or the joy, or how it might have changed you, or what that means. Indeed, the idea of community as well, which is very important to them, if we can call it a movement. But I've been looking at Art and Languages, The Fox, from 1975 to 76 as the inspiration for that. And hopefully, if we get the funding together, then we'll pull that off and put together a few issues.
I think that would be a really great thing to do. The Mother Reader, Essential Writing for Motherhood by Moira Davey, was done, I think, in the 80s. And that kind of pulls on literature and all diaries, people like Sylvia Plath and stories. So to bring that up to date and to include it more about making art and about being an artist, I think would be fantastic.
Mm. Mm. But we're definitely not a social networking group. And we don't function in that way. And so far, the website's not about posting notes like a mum's net, because those sorts of platforms exist. But so we'll see where it goes. But while we have the momentum and the interest, we'll keep going.
But if you get more of this momentum going, I can see that this is really quite a pressure group and a lobbying group that could be useful in affecting change for very pragmatic issues.
Absolutely.
For example, I just heard someone told me today that they are closing, or they're thinking of closing, the nursery at Goldsmiths College, which used to exist for staff, children of staff and students. And, you know, what seemed like an incredibly progressive thing for an art college is one of the, on the list of things to cut, even though it doesn't cost that much. Which seems incredibly sad and regressive.
But also in London, I don't know what it's like in New York, Susan, but in London you can take your baby to parent and baby cinema and go and see an adult show until the baby's about 9 months old before they start crawling and moving around too much. And breastfeed your child. They do that there. Well, you can't, not that I know of, you can't take your baby to any public lecture or seminar. Mm-hmm. Even a tiny infant that, and one of our tutors at the Royal College used to take her baby to group tutorials and seminars because the little one was small enough at the time to be able to do so, and I don't ever remember it being a distraction. But so we are in discussion with some of the larger institutions here in London to see if we can put pressure on them to at least program in some sessions with serious artists, and not somebody brought in to talk about motherhood, although that can be a discussion, mm-hmm. but where you could perhaps go to the larger institutions and enjoy a public lecture by someone you've wanted to see all your life, and they won't mind the fact that there are children in the audience.
What about, for example, if you were to bring your children to Tate Modern for a visit, are there any facilities currently for being able to leave your child while you go and see an exhibition?
No, they don't mind where you breastfeed, and they've received awards for being supportive of breastfeeding. But no, in terms of a crèche, it'd be amazing if you could drop your child for 2 hours and go and see a show uninterrupted, but you can't.
Do you think it would be possible, for example, to put pressure that they would open one up, and would you, you know, you could even pay for this. It seems incredible that they don't organise something like this when you could. Actually, I have friends who remember going to museums when they were young, and their parents would pay £2 or £1, and you could leave your child for 1 or 2 hours while you did something else, saw the show. So it seems very simple, actually, to set up as an idea, and this is.
And I think it would also please the non-parents to not have these children running around disturbing everyone.
That's true. But, you know, we are so heavily legislated now that in order to do that, the bureaucracy involved is quite complicated in terms of CRB checks and how many children you could have at any one time.
But surely that's no different from having a nursery. And, you know, an organisation as large as the Tate could easily organise this. It's not like they're not CRB checked nursery
could be
teachers.
Proposed.
Oh, it will be. It will be.
It will be.
It could
Tate,
be. It could be. Yes, of course it could
listening.
Be. Of course it could be. But it's just a lot more complicated than your friends when they were dropped off, you know, their time, you know, 20 years ago. I'm being generous there, 30 years ago. It was a very different climate.
Yeah. No, I do. Friends of mine remember going to the ICA where I worked when they were kids and having the most amazing time. They couldn't remember where their parents were. They were taken off and did all sorts of things for 3 or 4 hours. Mm. And so, I mean, I think it could be beneficial for both the children, you know, who have these great experiences there, and the parents. You know, there is a pressure now that museums and galleries should be inclusive, but then you often end up in a scenario where they're just far too busy and noisy to appreciate art, and doesn't make anyone happy. Or is that? Do you agree?
Absolutely.
What
do you think?
Totally agree.
What do you think, Martina? How easy is it to see an exhibition with a child?
Oh, it's impossible. I mean, when she was tiny and strapped to my chest and still, you know, completely breastfed, you know, I saw so many shows. I was constantly out seeing shows. And now she's nearly two and it's exhausting because she's running from post to pillar and I'm terrified I'm going to lose sight of her. And
we've just given up. And it was like, you used to go to the Met, you know, every 2 weeks, and then suddenly one day she could climb on sphinxes, and it was like, no, that's it, never again. And, you know, we'll pick it up again in 5 years' time or 3 years' time when you're out of that kind of animal stage. It's impossible. I would never, ever go to an exhibition with her. Mm.
But do you feel that this means that you're able to see fewer exhibitions?
Mm. Mm. That and has to be programmed into the weekly schedule like everything else, yeah.
How about you, Susan?
I see less. I see far less. And I tend to kind of speed exhibitions. Mm, you know, I've got one day and I do 10, you know, which, you know, it's not ideal at all.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of these concerns could be raised on through Enemies of Good Art to, you know, as a pressure group to some of these, at least the larger institutions.
Mm.
Absolutely. I was going to ask Ruth how useful she had found the discussions.
Well, the first one was overwhelming because all of a sudden I was in a situation where there were all these other mothers who were going through what I had been through, and it was fantastic to have the sort of informal feedback, but also to do it in a in this place at the Whitechapel in Goshka Makuga's scenario.
With Picasso's tapestry in front of us. It felt serious.
So
and
we
important,
yes, we
it?
Were sitting at a board table talking about these issues. So it gave it a solidity and an importance which was very much needed. So for me it was fantastic. But now I'm you know, I'm getting on with whatever I'm doing, but this is, of course, an issue for me. And I'm also trying to think, what is parenting and how we can re-evaluate it. I think it has become so much of a almost like a problematic scenario, and it's not imbued with all the positive and educational possibilities. I think we're sort of slightly in a trap here.
But we're also talking about parenting as opposed to mothering?
Yes. I think you have to. No?
Why aren't we talking about mothering?
I think it's
because we have partners, and that's why. I think because that's part of your family unit and keeping that together.
But even if it's not together, I mean, there are also single mothers or single fathers. I still would insist on parenting.
Martina disagrees.
I do, actually. I do. And just listening to the amount of women who have turned up at our public meetings and listening to how, and I hear it all the time because I'm so consumed by this, there are a lot of unhappy mothers who are really struggling, practicing artists who are trying to practice, not finding the headspace, and it's not their partners whose careers are failing or having trouble. It's the women.
So by this you mean actually...
But you know, mothering, that has such negative connotations.
Why?
That word.
It's not negative. It's
I know it's not, but the connotations are so negative.
So maybe we need to reclaim it.
That is a uphill struggle with a word like mothering. No?
Susan?
But then to say, oh, it's an uphill struggle, we're not going to bother with just parents.
Yeah, I agree.
It kind of, you know, it's like, well, where does that leave the mother?
Well, the mother is there, but we have to perhaps invent new terminologies, new word games. It's exciting. We're artists and writers. We can come up with amazing new terms. And then that's why I also enemies of promise. That's why I'm also resisting that.
Enemies of good art.
Yes.
Yes, but I think we've successfully killed Cyril Connolly. Delete him off the Amazon list now. In fact, we're going to all write a review of his book and stick it online.
But what I like about Enemies of Good Art as a title for what we're doing is that it doesn't tie us to anything.
Yeah, then it's provocative and starts a discussion.
Hmm.
But I think we have to...
there are enemies, though. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having these discussions.
Who are the enemies?
There are...
I think we are the enemies.
We're probably our own worst enemies.
Yes.
And there are enemies all around us. But I think the battle that women are having, you know, that's an enemy. That's a big enemy. I think we seem to think... I certainly did. I was so naive. I couldn't believe it until I had a baby. I thought I felt somehow equal within the world. Of course, I'm not.
Mm.
And then I have this amazing experience, and don't get me wrong, she's absolutely incredible. And I love every minute with her. And I don't regret anything that has changed in my life, but it's certainly more tricky to do what I'd like to do now. And it will change, but if we were that far ahead in terms of equality, then these discussions wouldn't be had.
Yeah, and I think it's always it's dangerous to say you have yourself to blame. I mean, we're in a particular era and a particular new government here where they would love to hear this because then that would justify them cutting even more credits and to working mothers. And, you know, I think this particular government is very much into encouraging people to look to keep domesticity away from the state realm and do everything in private and pay for it in private, and it will get worse for women if we're not lobbying and not aware of this now.
Mm.
It will become
That's just not possible. It's just not possible for so many people.
Mm.
Well, I just read a headline again in The Guardian today, which was talking about Spain and how so many Spanish grandparents look after children, and actually it's to such an extent that half of all Spain's grandparents look after their grandchildren 5 days a week. I mean, that's an enormous sum. That really speaks of a state that is not in any position or has no desire to make childcare a state issue. We have to be really careful that new ideas of big society don't really mean having to ask, you know, find family or pay people to look after your children. There is no
state childcare.
Yeah,
but we all know that's a load of propaganda. For, you know, we're all about to get completely screwed by this government or whatever government was in place. So we might as well stick our arms around each other and help each other out because we'll need to. And to a degree, I thought with Enemies of Good Art that I would in some way instigate the idea of community or that we would support each other. Or that I could share childcare responsibilities with other women, and it's really difficult to get something like that organised.
But
why, Martina, do you think?
Because I think people are afraid of bureaucracy. I think that we've become so removed from any sort of civic responsibility or duty towards each other that we're no longer capable of even forming civil associations.
But do you think the state should be involved in childcare?
Well, in the case of the two women in Milton Keynes, the two police women, who got into a lot of trouble at the time, although Ofsted did have to back down, about taking each other's children because they were seen to be gaining from their relationship. And of course they were. They were saving on childcare. But as police women, they're not getting paid a fortune. So the 500 quid a month, they were job sharing also, working part-time. So by saving that money, of course they were gaining. It was great. But why should the state give a damn about them taking each other's kids? And I think, you know, on the back of that, not only that, but people like to know that their child is going to be also in a nursery 2.5 days a week and it's organised and it's done. But also, you know, we have all this culture of fear as well, that you mustn't hand over your child to someone you don't know or a friend that you've met since you've become mothers. And there's, you know, we have to be somehow C or B checked and health and safety checked and ruled and regulated. So we're incapable of doing this. And I think it's a great shame. And also, particularly in London, it's probably the same in New York, I should imagine, but there's a huge demographic of young women with children and no families near them because they come from other parts of UK or they come from other countries.
Yeah, I think that's true. How is the situation in New York, Susan?
It's quite different. I send my daughter to a nursery and it's very unusual. Daycare is seen as a kind of poor person's option. It's not something that middle class, you know, people like you and I would do. It's just seen as, you know, not kind of a thing.
What would they do? Would they have
they'd have nanny. Because they have a huge continents and countries, Mexico and the Caribbean, of cheap labour that can come in. It's all done under, you know, cash in hand. Mm-hmm. And that's how it kind of evolves and works. I'm not comfortable with that, so I send my daughter to a nursery, but it's all Europeans that go there. It's really interesting. And we were like, what is this? This is so strange. You know, why don't people do this?
And is this state subsidized or is it entirely private?
It's entirely private.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no state. There's not even state card kindergarten here, really.
So at what age would there be state support? At what age do children go to a state school in US?
Kindergarten is at 4. Mm-hmm. And then I get a bit confused because I can't think too far ahead.
That's enough to deal with.
But yeah, it's a very, very different system. And it's a strange one for me. I find it quite difficult.
I mean, I was amazed. I have family in Belgium, and you know, from 6 months you have state care. I mean, and really full time. Most mothers work within 6 months, and it's extremely good childcare. It's very heavily subsidised. It costs less than I can't remember what it was, but it was certainly less than £100 a week. I think it was £100 a week, but then you also got more subsidies, so you would get half of that back. It was something like £50 a week. And it means that my Belgian, my partner's Belgian cousins have had children much earlier because they can afford to do so. You know, you don't have to wait until you can feel like you can just about afford to do this. And it's very much more normal. You don't have to wait to see if you've got family around or you could pay for childcare. There's just an understanding that women would want options, and a civil society makes those available, and that you don't have to do this all privately and with countless different options that you have to negotiate constantly. I find it absolutely incredible that we don't do this here. I mean,
no, and the whole Scandinavian model, I kind of look at it envy with that huge, you know, maternity leave and stuff. But yeah, it's so different. Here is like a million times worse than Britain in terms of maternity leave and private system. I mean, the state just don't really provide.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think we're nearing the end, so maybe we should go to final comments by everyone. Perhaps we can start with Martina. We just have a few seconds, so no, we're all right. We've actually got 9 minutes. Okay, very good. So perhaps we can just try and start summing up some of the ideas that have come out of today's session. So we've talked about, looked at Cyril Connolly and looked at some of the reasons why parenthood might be an enemy of promise, whether it's a lack of time, sleepless nights, being too tired, being possibly too happy, too elated, too proud to feel as strongly about your own practice, the need to earn money to be more stable, but also other the ability to prioritize better with children. That's come up as something that seems incredibly positive, actually, this kind of being able to focus and prioritize. What else, Martina?
Well, to get back to that notion of why there aren't more shows, and I think, Susan, this is more for you, because the ideas of parenting and children and the show in the 70s that you talked about in terms of the great people involved. But why do you think it's the case that we haven't had a seriously big show about parenting and childhood and birth for such a long time?
I think people are still wary of it. I think, however you look at it, the art world in big institutions is still dominated by men. It's seen as women's subjects. It might not be seen as important. Is it a crowd puller? Probably not. Which is increasingly important for institutions now. I have to get numbers in. I think they're probably the kind of the main reasons. But I think it could actually be all of those things, because really great artists are producing good work. It just needs to be well curated and well thought through and well publicized, and not, something very exciting and dynamic, and not kind of, the term that you used, and I'd never heard of, for baby art, which kind of turns people off.
Mm-hmm.
It just needs to be well thought through and smart.
And yet all the other big events in life are, you know, considered incredibly fertile ground for artists. Death, illness, you know, artists are allowed to talk about that. Shows can be about, you know,
sex.
But I think sex, death.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is extraordinary, the lack of shows. And that's what I hope to readdress.
And there was, I think I kind of misunderstood or didn't read it properly from a section of Cyril Connolly's book was about how children affected one's idea of mortality, and mortality, the fear of mortality being an incredibly important part of creativity, and a kind of spurring, just a useful fear to have for practitioners, and how something about birth and parenthood displacing that fear, because you need to carry on living for your child, and this being no good for creativity. We're all smiling. Do you agree?
No, I think it has the complete opposite effect, because you're so, like, if you die, what happens if I die? You know, quite often you think, what happens? You know, what will happen to everyone else around me? So that's something I never really thought about, is now quite acute.
Mm-hmm. I think the other issue we didn't really touch upon today is there are actually many artists who fed children and had and have a fantastic career.
Yeah, it's important to note that.
So there are positive, good stories to broadcast there too.
Yeah, and it's been, there have been male artists do talk about it quite a lot. You often get, the YBAs seem to be quite sort of big on the men
kids.
With kids, yeah. But maybe when they'd got to a kind of particular success level and they could, maybe they felt confident
enough. No. A lot of them had children very early before their careers took off of those men.
Mm. Yeah, but how many of those women made work about it or talked about it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, but I think you don't always have to make work about it. I think that would be terrible.
Why, though? It's you it happens to.
If all these mothers would make work about being a mother. What a limited few.
But not only make work about it.
Good.
But but to be able to make work about it.
Sure.
Or that it would be part of...
Of the work. And I think it is part of the work. And we just have to have a wider view of it all. what it is. For example, I was bringing in all the stuff from Goethe, who was a father, and he writes about Byron as his imaginary son. And that's why I talk about parenting, how you can have this idea of having children. It doesn't actually need to be your own children. It can be some practitioner who does something which...
But having a practice is like, you know, it's akin to having a child, isn't it?
In terms of inspiring figures, I remember, you know, when J.G. Ballard died, you know, all those kind of amazing obituaries, and how many of them focused on what a great father he was, what a great single father he was, and how he would have a very kind of provincial life and be taking his kids to school and cooking food for them and then writing these, like, crazy dystopian novels in between. But
he maybe wasn't just a biological father, but also an ideological father to many writers.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think we have to broaden this whole notion of what it is to be a mother and a father. And then maybe it will become more respected and more less marginal.
For women.
Yes.
But do we think that this is universal, that or... that we're speaking from a particular Anglo-American point of view.
It's always the particulars of it, of this time and place and historical conditions, for sure. If you go even 100 miles outside of London, it's different.
And we're all European women who live in big cities. I mean, it's a very particular point of view. Mm-hmm. Who, well, actually, also, I don't think I'd ever met Valentina. We don't have our family around us.
That's a big issue.
So, you know, our issues around childcare are very different from those who have their mother living two houses down the road.
Or in Spain, yes, your grandparents. These poor grandparents who apparently are planning to go on strike because no one's paying them rent.
But in a way, dare I say it, these lucky grandparents. How wonderful to have children.
Yeah. Course.
I don't know, but maybe once you've raised your family, you don't want to raise another one.
Yeah.
Another family.
I'm not so sure.
Who's already looking forward to grandparenthood?
Many of them.
All right, well, we're coming to the end of the programme. So, Martina, what next?
Oh, what next? Well, we have a series of 9 shows, and this being the first, so... we're busy working on those, and it's taking. It's really interesting. We have some really wonderful stuff coming up. The next one is on the artist self and the maternal self, and how one changes or how practice changes. And Anna Shorter is putting that one together. And among others, we've got one coming up called Big Society, where we talk about community and if in some way it is possible to form another set of criteria that would mean that we could support each other and financially. Be relieved from the burden of childcare and the worry of. But anyway, so there are other things coming up for this and future public meetings for now.
That's great. I was just thinking one thing we didn't mention was the kind of shift in framework for discussing this issue from the 70s, where psychoanalysis would be very much the framework in which much of these discussions would be had. And now we're talking very much in pragmatics and, many established female artists, so there's one hurdle in a way that has been crossed, but we're still very much talking about pragmatics. These things haven't been achieved in that time, but what has been but to psychoanalysis has been devalued. Anyway, that's for another session.
That's
so it leaves
session.
Me to thank Martina Molani, Ruth Blies-Luxburg, and Susan Bright from New York. Thank you, everyone.